Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Blizzard Watch, the podcast where we talk about Blizzard Entertainment and its many games. I'm your host, Matt Rossi, and with me this week is not just one, but two fantastic co-hosts. I'm going to introduce the longtime co-host first because she's always here and she's always doing a great job for the show. Ann Stickney, Ann, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I think I have a cold, but I'm not sure. I've been coughing a lot. I apologize if I sound kind of off on the show. That would be why. Well,
we're in that weird period where you can't tell if you actually have a cold or if it's just the weather changes or, you know, what is
going
on.
It might just be because I have the heater running and there's that whole, like, the heater dust thing that happens when the heater's been running.
Yeah.
Yeah. Only I think that that moment has passed, like, because I turned the heater on, like, 2 weeks ago and that moment has passed, I thought, but I don't know. Or it's just, you know, dry air in general. Great. Yay. Anyway, that's enough about me. Let's talk about our guest.
Yeah, also with us this week, he's not been on the show too many times, but he did do the BlizzCon special with us, and he's going to talk about some stuff with us today. Corey, what's going on, Corey? Say hi to everybody.
Hey. Hi, everybody. It's great to be here. Got a super nice day outside, and I've been above freezing, which is beautiful. Can't wait.
It's weird. Corey and I both live in Edmonton, so it's strange to me to be above freezing. I was not expecting it.
Unseasonably warm again, time of year.
For Edmonton, unseasonably warm is above freezing, like, just so you know. Or even when it was -6 the other day, we're like, wow, it's so warm out, I can go out in my shirt sleeves, because we're insane.
Sandals.
But, you know, since this is not actually a show about blizzards and the monitoring thereof, but rather about video games, despite its deceptive name, we're not going to talk too much more about Edmonton weather. Instead, we're going to talk about top stories. And the first top story is why Corey's here, actually, because last week Blizzard finally broke its silence as to the fate of the, you know, it's Heroes of the Storm esports, in that there is no Heroes of the Storm esports in 2019. So if you want to give us a rundown on what exactly is going on, because all I know is they just basically chopped everything.
That's right. That is 100% right. They announced last Wednesday, maybe Thursday, in a blog post that went out on social, they didn't even put it out as an official thing, that they were scaling back the developers involved with Heroes of the Storm, and that they were completely canceling the esports out entirely. And that was a bit of a shock to a lot of people, because while Heroes, the HGC had never been, you know, setting records in the esports world, it was no League of Legends or Dota, it was still respectable at 6th or 7th watched, and money involved 6th or 7th for views on Twitch and total prize pool given out. And everyone was just kind of working under the assumption that it was happening. So a lot of people were getting themselves ready for the next year. The roster apocalypse was happening with players dropping teams and retiring and new people signing up. And so all of a sudden, all of these people were just like, oh, I guess it's over, because there's no more HGC. And it was very sudden. So a lot of people are very upset. And
yeah, I remember, I was surprised that it was J. Allen Brack who actually wrote the post. Was from him, wasn't it?
Yep.
Directly from him?
And the new chief development officer.
Okay, and what is it they're doing with the, like some of the, they transferred people to other games? Is that what's going on?
Yeah, they're moving a lot of their developers off of Heroes of the Storm. Heroes has had some great developers recently with just the artwork that they're doing and the character animation. The work that Oscar and Lana and Karina have been doing on the Hots team has been amazing. And they're just the three who have gotten the most publicity out of BlizzCon. So they're probably taking some of them and pushing them into other upcoming projects that they're still working on and upcoming content for WoW, just because they don't want to support Heroes as much in the future.
Keep in mind they do have a bunch of unannounced projects still under their belt, don't they?
Yes, that's true. There are a lot of projects that are coming out in the future that we don't know about. They've got a bunch of secret stuff they're working on, so we could see some amazing things coming out of these people still.
Yeah,
and the developers still have jobs at Blizzard, so that's good.
Yeah, it's, well, and I mean, good for the developers and everything, but for all of the people who have been putting their time, energy, and work into, like, the esports side of things, where does that leave them? You know, they just have to move on now, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to ask about that because we just got out of BlizzCon last month. And people came out of BlizzCon thinking, okay, this is the big event for all of Blizzard's esports, including Heroes. And people were like, okay, now that that's over, we're going to look forward to the next year. And Blizzard was pretty quiet about next year that whole time, like until like last week, right? Am I correct on this?
Yes. A lot of people were being told behind the scenes, like the team coaches and the team managers were being told behind the scenes that 2019 was definitely a thing. It was definitely going to happen. In their upcoming What's Happening Next 2019 for the HOTS thing from the BlizzCon, like, cinematic, they HGC is part of it. So everyone, this surprised a lot of the developers on Blizzard, on the HOTS side of things, too, the change and the reduction and the canceling of the pro scene.
It just sounds like it was a really sudden thing to everybody. Like,
yeah.
Nobody was aware that this was happening until it was dropped.
There were
including,
reports from
like,
some of the
internal people had no idea that this was happening.
Yeah, there were reports from some of the pros who were saying that they were getting told by Blizzard, hey, we'll have an announcement for you in a couple weeks, no later than this date. And then they blew past that. It was like the end of November or something. And they blew past that. And so something in the last month changed enough with their priorities. They decided to move a lot of their content into other places.
This just kind of makes me sad. This means no Heroes of the Dorm either, right?
No Heroes of the Dorm. The collegiate stuff is done.
Aww.
Which is kind of the problem with how Blizzard set up the HGC and the Heroes of the Dorm. Because they kind of took complete control and nobody else was really running any teams. Heroes Hype is an organization that was helping them run their open division, which is where the teams could like work up through and try and get into the HGC. And so that was kind of the only other game in town. There wasn't really any other tournaments happening, so organizations like them and Heroes Hearth are looking at trying to get another grassroots community going and trying to get some more high-level Heroes play happening in the next year. But what ends up happening with that, we'll have to wait and see. Hopefully we'll get some news, some solid plans coming out.
That kind of bums me out, because Heroes of the Dorm, I mean, I remember the first year that they did it and they were on ESPN and there was that whole tweet storm from very confused people. Who were why are there video games on my ESP? What are they talking about? Hams and cores? I don't understand. It was just great. It was great. I don't know. I always really enjoyed watching that, like, every year. And I'm really kind of sad that we're not going to see that. Because that was a really good opportunity for people.
Yeah, it got them involved. And a lot of those tweets were things along the lines, too, of, holy crap, I don't know what this game is, but all of a sudden there's these people getting really excited about a core and there's Ham involved. So I'm into it now. And it was really cool to see people from outside the community get involved like that or get excited about things that we're doing.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that's really sad to see is that people have, you know, they've made a kind of career out of this in some cases. This is people's job.
Yeah. I feel so bad for, I feel so bad for all of the pros, for the support staff around the teams. There's a lot of people whose livelihoods were this. And there's some argument to be made that it kind of sucks. You shouldn't like place your entire fortunes on someone else's product like that. But it's at the end of the day, it's the Christmas season and they're going in. They just got told that they basically have no job.
Yeah, that's not fun at all. So what does this mean for the future of Heroes of the Storm in general?
For the future in general, we are looking at whatever release schedule we have is going to be a lot less of a schedule. We're currently used to getting a new hero about every 6 months. So I'm expecting to see one about every 2 months now, if that, maybe every 3 months. So the release schedule of the heroes is going to slow down. I don't know if we're going to see much more in the way of Battlegrounds or what the upcoming events will be like. Because right now they're running their toy event for Wintervale, and it's super fun. And there's this fun little mini game with great voice actor. He gives out quests and you're moving pieces around and
the skins are fantastic.
The Dahaka skin that's like a plastic dinosaur toy, and his ultimate ability where he puts a blob on someone's head and it makes them blind for a couple seconds. They can't cast. In that skin, he puts a little dinosaur mask on people's heads. And it's hilarious because all of a sudden there's a dinosaur-headed Malfurion wandering around.
Yeah.
No!
So Heroes of the Storm, what it sounds like is they're just kind of dialing it back like they did with Diablo 3, where it's like, we're going to go ahead and release stuff, but it's not going to be like major patch stuff, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's probably what we can expect. Content here and there, some events, something like that, but nothing groundbreaking, and I don't think we're going to see much more in the way of major game overhauls or updates.
That really makes me sad.
It does. Heroes was a lot of fun. The developers looked like they were always having a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, everybody always looked like they were having a really good time with it, and I didn't play it. Keep in mind that I didn't really play it because I was terrible at it, and I should stop talking about it like it's already gone or something, because it's not going anywhere. The game's still going to be there. You can still play the game and stuff. It's just the esports stuff that's been shut down, and they're kind of dialing back on the new content and things like that, but the game's still going to be there. I never really got into it because I wasn't very good at it, but I always enjoyed watching it. Like, I enjoyed watching people play it, and I always enjoyed watching the tournaments and stuff like that. They were super fun to watch. So, yeah.
I saw one thing online that I thought was pretty telling. They're like, you know, from the beginning to now, Blizzard managed to completely lose out on a genre that they created.
Yeah.
You know, games like League and Dota 2 are playing in a sandbox that Blizzard made possible in the first place. And when Blizzard brought in their entry to it, there's nothing, you can't say there's anything mechanically bad about Heroes of the Storm. There is nothing wrong with this game. I didn't play it that often, but I did play it, and it does exactly what you expect that kind of game to do. It does it pretty well. I understood. I had fun playing Malfurion, who's like a healer in a you know, Dota style game. I'm going to call it a Dota style in the game now, because come on, you know, I don't like MOBA. I've never liked MOBA. Ugh, sounds like a really angry space whale. But anyway, yeah, it's so weird to see this happen to this game. I did not expect it. I especially didn't expect it just sort of dropped on everybody like this.
Yeah, no, that was very sudden. Like, not even a rundown, like a shorter, we're going to do one more half season kind of thing, guys, to run it out or reducing it. Just completely gone. Stop. But was very surprising.
Yeah, I don't know. That's just weird that they would do that. And like I said, it seems like it was a surprise to everybody, including people that were working on it actively in Blizzard, which is just, it's like, okay, well, that's new. I'm kind of curious if maybe this is just a sign that maybe MOBA games in general are kind of like, they had their moment and now people are moving on to something else.
I feel like MOBAs have gotten to the same thing that MMOs got to, where there's a couple big ones that dominate the space and a few quirky, plucky ones that still hold on and carve out niches. But a lot of that glut is gone. Like, Dota 2 and League of Legends are pretty much dominating the space. And anybody else who's doing something along those lines has a little niche. And I don't think Blizzard felt like a niche was where they wanted to be with their game. Like, if they're going to be pouring development resources into it. That's just my thoughts.
Honestly, when I think about MOBAs, like, the first thing I go to is League of Legends and then Dota. But, and I mean, maybe I should go to Dota first because it was here first. It was like the first thing that kind of defined the genre to begin with. But League of Legends is so big that it's like they're still having their moment and they're still apparently doing absolutely fine. It feels like Heroes just never quite got to that level for some reason. And I don't know why, because it's a really good game. Like I said, I always enjoy watching it, you know.
I don't know if Corey will think about this, but I wanted to ask it and see what he thinks. Do you think that the runaway success of Overwatch and the Overwatch League had anything to do with this?
There's some rumbling from the people involved with HOTS that they felt that they were kind of the guinea pig esports structure for the Overwatch League, and that while the Overwatch League was getting promoted like crazy, and anyone who came up with an idea for the HTC that turned out really well got kind of snapped up by Overwatch League because it was the big moneymaker. So they mentioned someone with the handle Sia Steve, who kind of pioneered the bit cheering system for HOTS and the HOTS League, where you gave 100 bits and you would put it into a pool and then you would get stuff for in heroes through the Twitch when you're watching the matches. And they took that over to Overwatch League and it's doing great over there and getting their stuff. But it started in the HGC. So they were thinking that anything good happening in HGC just kind of got snapped up. And like Overwatch League is huge. They said they build it from the ground up. They got new teams. They, you know, all the stuff about Overwatch League that's making it success, Haas just never quite got for the HGC. There's no merch store where you can buy Team Freedom or Heroes Hearth or Fnatic merch the same way. Like they were all running their own stores for their own stuff, but there was no like central Blizzard store selling HGC merch.
Yeah, you can't get a special like, you know, Malfurion skin that like it's like a purple and blue thing or what have you, team colors, nothing like that.
Yeah.
All right. You guys think we've anything else to talk about on this one before we move on?
Yeah, let's go ahead and move on.
All right, since Ann mentioned Diablo before, I'm going to mention that Diablo's Season 16, Diablo 3's Season 16 is coming out. Originally, it was announced for January 11th, but it's been moved to January 18th. So that's about halfway through next month. And it's the Season of Grandeur, which either of you guys like read up on this? I can explain it, but if either of you wants to, that's cool too.
No, you go ahead and go over it.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Season of Grandeur is different than other previous seasons. Like if you play during the Season of Greed, or as I like to call it, the best season ever. Oh God, please make every season the Season of Greed. Why is it gone? I miss it so. The Season of Greed, it didn't matter if you were doing a seasonal character or not. The extra treasure goblin portal, the extra treasure goblins and extra treasure goblin portals and all that stuff was for everybody. If you were playing Diablo 3 during that season, you got access to that, whether or not you were playing a seasonal character. For this season, Season 16, only seasonal characters get the benefit of the Season of Grandeur, because the Season of Grandeur is an entirely new type of season. Instead of it being just a world thing like the extra goblins or the extra Haradric Kashas or what have you, instead, everybody gets a legendary power from a specific legendary, in this case, the Ring of Royal Grandeur, which... If you don't know what that is, the Ring of Royal Grandeur is a legendary that reduces the amount of set pieces you need to activate a set bonus by one with a minimum of two. So if there's a two-piece set bonus, you still need two pieces to get that. But if there's a four-piece set bonus, you only need three pieces to get that. If there's a six-piece, then you only need five pieces to get that, which means
So the ring's kind of like a filler for that last set slot, kind of.
If you wanted to use the six-piece set bonus on your Crusader set, but there's also a two-piece set bonus that you want to use, but that set bonus would require you to not wear all of the set that you want to get the six-piece bonus on, it would normally not be possible. But with the Ring of Royal Grandeur, suddenly it is. One example I can give you is that on a Barbarian, the six-piece Wrath of the Waste set bonus is really good. You spin around and kill everything and it just does immense amount of damage. But the two-piece Immortal King set bonus is also good, but you can't get both normally because
they overlap on a slot.
Yeah, you need to wear the belt.
Okay.
Both the Wrath of the Waste set and the Immortal King set have a belt that you would need to wear. Then you'd need to use a weapon that's also part of the set. With this ring's bonus, you can now do that. You could have both set bonuses. So you could have permanent ancients up while also spinning around constantly, which, you know, it's like a dream for me.
So this is basically the season of OP is what I'm hearing.
Well, the cool thing about it is that it also means that you won't need to use the ring. The ring doesn't stack, and neither does the ring power stack with the Kanai's cube, which means that you just get a free legendary power and you don't need to use it. Like you don't need to have that ring on. You don't need to have the Kanai's cube power turned on. So you can use whatever a different Kanai's cube power, and you can use a different ring. You don't have to use this one, which means...
Wait, so you don't actually have to have it like equipped or anything to get the bonus from it?
Not at all. And it doesn't stack.
Oh my gosh. So
there's
okay.
no reason. If you have the ring or you have the ring power in your cube, there's no reason to use it this season because you'll just have it.
Oh man, that's going to make Greater Rifts go crazy.
Yeah, people are going to be trying to work out new data mining, what's going to be the best, the best legendary combination to use. And there's going to be lots of people doing theory crafting for it. Right now, Blizzard has their idea of what they think is going to be the strongest combination, but they've admitted we're waiting to see what you come up with.
Okay, well, let's move on to the rewards because we need to talk about those wings.
Okay, yes. The cosmetic rewards are the typical two pieces of Conquerors. The typical frame, but yeah, there's also, I can't remember the name of the monarch butterfly wings, but
the wings of Lembo, they're so pretty.
Yeah, the wings of Lembo are, if you remember, Magda, the way Magda looked,
yeah,
when you actually did Diablo 3, imagine that, but colored like a monarch butterfly's wings, and they are very striking. There's an item in game you can get that does the same appearance, but not quite not the same color. So this is a unique color for the variant for that skin. And the item you get in game is extremely rare. It's like you'll be going to Whimsy Shire a lot before you get these wings. They are extremely rare. So it's cool that you can now get them just for doing the season. You don't have to worry about it. And of course, there's the typical, extra stash tab, extra. You can get your Kanai's, you can not Kanai's cube, you can get the Hadrig's gift. Which, by the way, I always feel like I need to mention this. If you're completing on a season character, but the set you're getting for that character would be one you already have on your main and you don't want to get the same set because you know when the season's over, you're going to end up with just a duplicate set and you're going to have to trash it. You don't have to give your Hadrig's gift to the character that earns it because you get a Hadrig's gift for completing Chapter 2, Chapter 3, and Chapter 4. And you can just, as soon as you get the box, you can send it to any other seasonal character that you have. So you could make a level one.
So send it to somebody who doesn't have the set already. Yeah.
If you want to say you wanted the Crusader version that's dropping this season, or say you wanted the Demon Hunter version, you could just roll a level one Demon Hunter and just send the Hadrig's gifts to them, and they can open them, and the set inside will become the one for Demon Hunters. It's keyed to whoever opens it. So if you open it on a monk, you get monk tier. If you open it on a demon hunter, you get demon hunter tier. Necromancer, same deal. And you have to make sure, if you want to get a complete set, you have to open all three on the same character. Because otherwise, that's it. You only get three Hadrig's gifts. Even if you played one character through chapter 2 and then switched around, you're not going to get another Hadrig's gift until you hit chapter 3 on that new character. There's only three. That's what you get. You get their lock to your account, not to your characters. So.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. So all that's kicking in on January 18th?
That's correct.
Okay,
that's,
cool.
This particular season is different in terms of the way they're doing this power
thing.
How long
do the seasons usually run?
3 to 4 months. Like, I feel like season 15 has been going for a while, like at least 6 months.
I was going to say, exactly this whole season agreed thing, that's been around for a while, hasn't it?
That was 2 seasons ago.
Oh, okay.
The season we have right now, I believe, is not the Hadrig's gift. The caches from the bloody heck, Haradrim, the Haradric caches one.
I thought because you were talking about the season of greed, I thought we were still on that, or I had just finished that. Okay, all right.
That one ended. The new one started, and now this one's coming in after this one ends. So you've got, if you're still doing the Haradric cache one, which is really great if you're trying to get crafting materials, you've got roughly a month because it's the 19th today, right?
Today's the 19th. Mm-hmm.
So you've got a day less than a month to get whatever you want to get done because the season will be ending. Actually, the season will end before the new season starts, so keep that in mind too.
Okay. We should probably move on because we got other stuff to talk about here too.
Yeah. Let's actually talk about the Sarfang quest chain going live because that's pretty interesting.
Oh, boy. Okay.
That was a fun game.
Yeah. So the Sarfang quest chain, basically... It was really funny, too, because we had somebody ask about this on Monday's queue. They were like, why isn't that chain in yet? And I kind of theorized, well, maybe that Lost Honor cinematic, the one that we saw at BlizzCon, maybe that one actually takes place after the Battle for Dazara'lor. so we aren't going to see it until later. And then the day after, I said that, the quest popped up. So, okay. Anyway, there's a quest. If you're a Horde player, there should be a quest on the Wind's Redemption in Zoldazar. Talk to Dark Ranger Alina. She has a quest called The Dark Lady Calls. So here's the deal. Lost Honor did actually take place earlier. It doesn't take place after the Battle for D'Zar Alor. But Sylvanas has gotten word that Sourfang is no longer in the stockades in Stormwind and wants you to go find him. And she sends you with one of her Dark Rangers to go track him down. And you go on this wild goose chase throughout Elwynn Forest. It's super fun. There is a point, I'm not going to spoil everything because I don't really want to spoil everything or anything like that. There's a point where you can make a choice and you're essentially, I wouldn't call it picking a side, but in that moment you have to decide what you're going to do, because obviously Sourfang and Sylvanas are not seeing eye to eye and they are on two different wavelengths as far as how they think the Horde should be run and what they think the Horde should be. So you can throw your, you know, you can throw your loyalty in with one side or the other. And we don't know what the consequences of that are going to be just yet. However, one side of that quest chain, if you choose it, you get a new toy for your toy box. If you choose the other side, you get power for Azerite power for your necklace, like, you know, just a little token thing that gives you some more of the Azerite power. With the note that more will come later, like there will be more story later. It's kind of interesting to me because I think this is probably one of the first times that we've seen player choice come to the fore like this and actually affect which direction your quests are going to go.
And these aren't small choices either.
No, these are big choices, and they make you really think about everything that's been going on and where your loyalties really lie. And I don't know if you're locked into one side or the other once you make this decision. I'm assuming that you will have opportunities to switch one way or the other if you deem it necessary later on, but I don't know because we've never seen anything like this before, ever.
Like, yeah, it's very rare that you actually have the opportunity to say, I want to do X or I don't want to do X. Especially since a lot of people complained about not having that option in the run-up to battle. Yeah.
Yeah. You weren't allowed to make a decision with Teldrassil. And a lot of people were kind of upset about that because they were like, this is not something that my character would ever be cool with. But we had to do it anyway because that's what the quest told us to do. When 8.1 came out on the Horde side, when you do the introduction to Darkshore, I did finally get around to getting that one done. I'm so happy about that. You're offered another choice at that point where you're given a job to do and you can choose whether to do the job or whether to have Blightcaller do it for you. Just depending on how you feel about the situation. And there's no immediate repercussions or anything from choosing one way or the other, but you kind of get the impression that these NPCs are going to remember the choices that you made, and you will hear more about your choices later. It's interesting. It's just interesting because it adds like this new dimension to things that hasn't really been there before, and we don't have anything quite like that on the Alliance side, but the Alliance side isn't doing anything outwardly terrible as of yet. You know what I mean?
So there's a D'Zar Alor, at least.
Yeah, there's no reason for anyone to have to make that choice on Alliance side because it's the dynamic over there is an entirely different thing. And I know a lot of people are talking about, oh, this is just a retread. It's Garrosh Hellscream 2.0. Da, 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 da. No, this has got a really different feeling to it. It really does. There's something.
Well, I mean,
bigger going
even
on.
Even then,
there.
You didn't get asked your opinion. Mm-hmm. Even then, you were just assumed you were going to rebel.
Yeah.
And join up with Vol'jin. Nobody yeah. gave you a chance to say yes or no to anything.
Yeah, but as far as like the Alliance side of things go, they haven't done anything to the degree where it's like, yeah, as a player, I don't agree with what my character is doing. Not to the same level as what's going on Horde side. This is one of those expansions where I know that people, you know, they have their side and they stick to their side or whatever, but it's really, I need to reiterate this, just for the leveling experience alone, it's worth playing both sides of the faction fence. It really is, because it's two completely different stories. And they're both great. They both have their ups and downs, but they're both great. And there's a lot going on the Horde side right now, but just because there's a lot going on the Horde side right now, it doesn't mean nothing's going on Alliance side. It just means this is where the story beat is at, and it's going to move somewhere else later on. And I'm pretty sure that the Alliance is going to get just as much to do, especially after some of the stuff that I saw with the war campaign, because I did that finally on the Horde side. Oh my gosh, you guys. Okay, there's so much going on here. Yeah. I can't wait to see where this expansion goes.
Rexxar gets some big moments with the Horde campaign right now.
He really does. He really does. And a lot of the stuff that the Horde is doing and that Sylvanas is doing, I should just say Sylvanas because it's not necessarily the Horde, it's her. There's a lot going on with what she's doing and it's leading up to something big. And I think I'm kind of getting the picture of what that big thing is. And we haven't even scratch the surface of what's going on here. It's gonna go places. I know it's gonna go places. I'm very excited to see where this expansion goes because I think I know where it's going and it's gonna be crazy. Okay, anyway, this is all conversations that we can have on Lore Watch though, and we will be recording Lore Watch on Sunday. So we'll do that then. However, the quest chain, if you haven't played it, go play through it because it's worth playing through.
Okay. There's a lot of fun moments. I really enjoyed myself doing it.
All right, cool. Next thing we'll probably talk about really fast is the Hive Mind mount that has been found. If you didn't know what that was, it's the weird floating brain jellyfish mount.
You should know what it is because it's all over every city right now. Everybody has one.
Invasion of the brains from outer space.
It's essentially a similar type experience to back when in Legion with the various secrets mounts. The ones I'm thinking about are the Riddler's Mind Worm and the really complicated one that made you go to Karazhan and under Karazhan to get, what's that one called?
The one with the catacomb? The one with the unicorn? Yeah. I forget what the mount is called, but it's the black and purple unicorn that I love to pieces.
I think it's the Lucid Nightmare.
The Lucid Nightmare,
that's it. Yeah. But this new mount, the Hive Mind, is similar to that in that you have to go through a really complicated series of events to get it, involving finding monocles and searching places and petting cats and Suramar. And
the interesting part about this one though is because this is a multi-person mount, obviously it's a hive mind, so in order to obtain it there are a couple of steps that you have to do in a five-man group,
like including the final step.
Yeah, the final couple of steps are with a five-man group, and once you complete it with that group you all get the mount. There's no one person gets a mount at a time or anything. Nope, you all get it. The cool part about this, though, is the way that the Hive Mind works, the way that the Hive Mind mount works is you can put in, it's like a multi-person mount. If you're in a group with people, they can hop into the Hive Mind with you. There is a speed bonus involved, and you four other people can go into the Hive Mind with you. Obviously, five-man group, four other people hop in. Each person in there increases the mount speed by 10%, but that's only applicable if it's the five people that you obtain the mount with. You're linked by the Hive Mind, and that's where the speed bonus comes into play. Now, if you're hearing this and going, man, I just did it with a bunch of random people, I don't group with these random people, I group with my friends, that's okay. Take your friends to go get the mount. You can do it more than once. You won't get the mount more than once, obviously, once you have it once, but you can repeat the experience, and it's basically the last five people that you went and you did this with, those are the five people that are going to offer you that speed bonus. And that they did that specifically. I understand why they did it. I wish that they had explained it to begin with, but they didn't. The reason that they did this is because they don't, if it gave you that automatic speed boost, no matter who hopped in it, we would never see anybody on anything but the Hive Mind ever again. And they didn't want that.
It would be the Water Strider all over again.
It would be the Water Strider all over again. They didn't want that. They didn't want that experience. They wanted to make it like a special bonus reward for getting together with your buddies and doing this thing and getting it done. I am flabbergasted at how quickly the WoW Secrets community managed to unravel this thing. I don't know if you guys were watching or not, but I was watching a couple of different Twitch streams, including the one where they finally got through the jumping puzzle. And it was a really entertaining experience to watch them beat their heads against the wall until they figured it out. Once they figured it out, they were so happy. Yeah, so I don't know if you guys watched any of that, but
I watched the part where they found out that you had to go to Suramar and pet a very specific cat.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, oh, okay.
I love the petting cats part. I also love that they finally gave Grifta something to do, that everyone's favorite troll vendor who sells maybe not the most useful items.
Okay, the fact that the whole thing started because you bought the amulet of treasure tracking and put it on, and it actually unlocked a treasure. I mean, thank you. Thank you for making Grifta relevant. It only took how long since Burning Crusade? A long time.
A long time.
Anyway, so yeah, if you're interested in finding the Hive Mind, I believe Wowhead has like all of the steps hammered out, and I imagine that in the group finder there are still groups that are going out and getting it. So just find yourself a group, man. Get yourself a floating brain.
And as Mitch notes in the chat, you don't need all four monocles personally. If you're doing it with a group of people you know, you can coordinate and send each person after one monocle.
Yeah.
So it makes it easier. Because you can cut down a bunch of time if you're all simultaneously working on the four steps.
Yep. Okay.
Alrighty then. Last thing we're going to talk about in terms of stories before we move on to some emails. One of the things that got announced last week, just after we did the show, is they're going to be changing up the way the Overwatch League works this coming season. One of the things they're experimenting with is something they call homestand weekends. And those are essentially home games for specific Overwatch teams. And the way they want Overwatch League to work ultimately is very similar to an actual pro sports, you know, league where you have franchise teams and they actually play in cities and they have home games and they have away games. And when you're not playing home, you're playing in somebody else's home sort of thing where teams travel to other cities and so forth.
So it's not every game always in the Overwatch Arena, even though the Overwatch Arena is amazing.
Yeah, great. They're aiming for, I know the Dallas Fuel is one of them. The Dallas Fuel, the Washington team whose name I'm currently forgetting.
They're going to do the Atlanta Reign, Los Angeles Valiant, and the Dallas Fuel. Okay. Those three teams are going to be doing the homestand weekend series.
And then the various other teams are going to come play them at home, where they're basically going to be playing in various places in their home cities, and they'll basically be like series. It's not going to be just like, okay, that team comes and plays and then we're done. It's going to be like they're playing over a like 2-3 day period. They're going to be playing like 8 teams. So it's still not quite the way you would expect a home or away game to work, but it is still pretty cool if you're a fan.
Yeah, it's a little bit different. The first one of these weekends, they're calling them, what is it? It's like a homestand weekend, I think is what they're calling it.
Yeah, homestand weekend. Yep.
The first one of these is at tail end of April, and Dallas Fuel is going to be hosting a bunch of teams. They're going to be playing the Chengdu Hunters. I'm going to just mangle these names. I'm so sorry. I will practice them, I swear. The Spark, Houston Outlaws, the Spitfire, Paris Eternal, Los Angeles Valiant, and the Seoul Dynasty. Those teams are going to come out to Dallas and play there over the course of 2 days. And I think the Fuel, they're calling it an ultimate weekend is how they're framing it. So yeah, these guys are actually going to be going out to Dallas to play in Dallas. And on the Atlanta side of things, people are going to be coming out and they're going to be playing in Atlanta. And I think that one is in July. They're going to have, they're going to have the Mayhem, the Charge, the Excelsior, the Fusion, the Dragons are going to be there. The Defiant's going to be there. And I think Washington Justice is going to be there as well. And then in August, that's when the Valiant are going to be hosting. And they're going to be playing, what is it? Atlanta, Boston, Dallas, the Spark, Gladiators, Excelsior. I think they're bringing in Vancouver.
And the Titans. Yeah. The Titans.
And the Dragons. And then there's one other team. The Shock. San Francisco. Yeah. And that's, I think it's going to be like just over the course of a weekend. So it's 2 days over the weekend in some place where they're just going to do like a homestand thing. And it's just those three teams for this season. I'm assuming that if this goes over well, they will be expanding it into more cities or something like that. It's interesting. It's interesting how they're just kind of like, they started out very centrally with the whole Overwatch League stadium there in California and everything last, like with season one, and now they're slowly starting to branch out.
Yeah, they've said that this is the goal, is ultimately hoping that they will be able to do, you know, home and away games and have that be part of the league. But for right now, this is just the first tentative step on it, where it's still pretty cool that you'll get to actually go and see, even if you're not in Los Angeles, you could get to buy tickets for the team that's in your town if you happen to have.
Personally,
a team in your
town. I think it would be super cool if all of a sudden we had like London home games and Paris home games and home games like over in East Asia. Like, that would be so neat. Because
yeah,
it would allow people around the world to experience these games live instead of people that live in California. You can go see these live, or you can go watch it on Twitch. It'd be cool if these were happening all over the place.
Plus, I mean, one of the things they mentioned last year that was hard on Overwatch League players is the vast majority of them have to uproot for the whole season.
Yeah,
and they're you know, living in a foreign country for, you know, in many cases, for like the entirety of the season. And even if they're not, I mean, even if they're like an American player, they're in California, whether or not they're from California. There's a lot of strain on people to be spending months and months away from home. If they can actually make it so that teams are set up in a hometown and do home games and away games, then you'll only have to travel on certain weeks and you'll know where you're going and when you're going to be back. Like, it'll be much more reliable, and you'll be able to stay settled down in one area. Like,
and you know where home is at, you know?
Yeah. So we'll see if it actually happens. I mean, it's pretty ambitious. And
it could go a long way to helping with the burnout that a lot of them were facing.
Yeah, exactly.
They're already helping out with that a bit too, because they're changing up how the schedule works and how games are run and what days the games are played and how many games each player is playing each team is playing per season. The addition of the new teams should help relax that a little bit. But yeah, it was really grueling because it's like, it's a very different style of gameplay from what you usually see in tournament play. Because usually with tournament play with other games, you know, you're playing in this tournament and then to qualify for this other tournament, but in between those tournaments you're just playing on your own time, right? And with this one, it's like every game counts. Also, you're playing this many games per week, and it's just the stress levels, man. I can't even begin to comprehend what kind of stress those guys were under in season one. So I'm hoping that it kind of relaxes a little bit in season two. Also, I'm still throwing myself 100% behind the Shanghai Dragons because I love them. So that's where I'm at, guys.
This is their year.
That's just where I'm at, guys.
Well, alrighty then. That pretty much covers that. So we're at the point of the show now where we do some emails. If you have an email for the show, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show. Ann usually reads them for us, so unless she refuses and then I'm forced to do it, she'll be doing it now.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and do it. But I think we're going to start with the second email first instead of the first email here. And the second email is from Harlando, who says, "Hello all, thank you for the great podcast and site. Been listening and reading since before the new site. I'm happy to support the site to this day. Thanks. My question is, which zone of the game would you like to see have a complete overhaul like the Warfront zones have to be? Max level content, which would make for interesting war fronts both from a narrative standpoint and or aesthetically, or is there some other war front like quote unquote feature they could use to breathe some new life into old zones to alternate when world quests would be up? Cheers, Harlando." I'm just going to pipe up just immediately and then I'm going to let you guys talk, but I have two zones that I think would be perfect for a Warfront overhaul for no other reason than they absolutely need an overhaul, and that would be Eversong Woods and where the Exodar is at as your missiles. They need a revamp, guys. I mean, they've been exactly like they are since Burning Crusade. Let's touch them and do something to them. It would be great. Anyway,
agreed.
Go ahead, both of you.
I think Corey should go since he's a guest.
Oh, thank you very much. I thought about this for a minute, and I think Southern Barons, because you got Camp Toro there, so you can get the Torn involved, and they haven't had like a starring presence in the two war fronts yet. Plus, there were some Dwarven ruins on the other side, so you can get the Dwarves out to have some fun, get some Dwarf structures built up there. I love the new designs in the war fronts for all the buildings. It's great seeing them put into action like that. So you got some good story stuff with the Taurens and the Dwarves. Maybe not the most obvious enemies, but they could be agitating over some relics they found in the area. And plus you got Razorfen Crawl and Razorfen Downs just sitting there ready and waiting for some new story content around them.
Yeah, there's already some kind of like factional conflict going on down there in the South Barrens, and there has been for a... It'd be kind of cool to see that ramp up. Yeah, I think you're right. I think it would be cool to see Azerite pop up there too, because that's kind of... Well, the implication is that there are Titan facilities all over the place, and that's one of those places where there are Titan ruins and Titan things going on. So yeah, why not?
Well, they did mine. The first one they did was one I've been arguing they should be revamped for years. So, I mean, good. But now I can't use it. But I've been thinking about this one a lot, and I've got a few, but the one I'm going to talk about first is Durotar.
Really?
Specifically from Northwatch Hold up.
Okay.
And what I'd like to basically see is a no-holds-barred alliance invasion of the Horde's home base. Straight up trying to go into Orgrimmar, trying to conquer it. And first you're trying to basically go from Northwatch Hold up to Tirigard Keep. I think it's called Tirigard Keep. What is that place called? You know the one that's...
I think it's Tirigard Keep, yeah.
Yeah, the one that's... like, imagine that those two areas are the things they're fighting over, and it's like the Alliance is trying to start a battle zone there, and the Horde is trying to stop them because they don't want them to have a foothold to launch an invasion of Orgrimmar. Then you go over to the Alliance side, and you do... Do you know how that when the trench got cut through the Eastern Kingdoms?
Yeah.
There's like Dunmorrow, and then like Elwyn both kind of just abut it, and there's that huge thing, there's that whole area there where there's just nothing. Like, I was thinking, what if you tried making like a similar kind of warfront thing that goes from Dunmorrow through the Badlands and tries to actually get up into Stormwind?
Oh, yeah.
So you basically
along
hit
that
Elwyn.
Trench?
Yeah, basically tries to make... I'm trying to think of the name of the... There's like a whole area there. Bloody heck. I'll know this. The second I stop trying to think of it, I will remember it. It's where the Dark Iron Dwarves originally were.
The Burning
and
Steps?
The Searing Gorge.
Oh, Searing Gorge, okay.
There's that whole area that goes from, like, if you start in Dunmorrow, you can basically follow around. It goes straight from Dunmorrow, you're in Searing Gorge all of a sudden. Then from Searing Gorge, you're, like, right in the back forest of Elwyn. It's right along the coast, and it's actually, there used to be a dragon in a cave.
Yeah.
I don't remember him, but he was right there, and if you just go past him, you're suddenly in Elwyn. Like, so the Horde might try and pull an Andron because they have bases in the Badlands. So imagine you've got the Horde trying to pull an Andron using their bases in the Badlands and using like Blackrock Mountain as staging grounds to go into Stormwind through Elwyn. And so the Alliance has to try and hold them off to keep them from setting up an invasion camp right there, right on the edge of Stormwind.
That would be a cool spot.
Yeah, and that would make the war a lot more front and center. Like, if each side is actually trying to set up places where they can make a knockout blow.
And it would give Sylvanas and Anduin a chance to pop out and do something.
Yeah, that would be nice, too.
I think,
aside from that stuff, though, one place I'd like to see it revamped that has nothing to do with a warfront at all, but I've always wanted to see it get revamped, is Uldumon.
Ooh.
And I want to see Uldumon not as a dungeon. I want you to leave the dungeon alone, but turn Uldumon into an outside zone. It wouldn't have to actually be outside, but non-instance, where you see what happened to Uldumon since. And quite frankly, upgrade some of the graphics.
So it'd be like an underground warfront, kind of.
Yeah. It doesn't have to even be a warfront. It's just a place to go. And remember how there used to be there used to be worlds, like zones just out in the world. Like, just put it out in the world. It's a place to go. Both sides can go in to try and find Titan secrets. And you've got, like, redo the visuals so it looks like a Titan facility. Because it hasn't kept up. We've gotten all these Titan places since. And Uldumon doesn't look as cool as any of them anymore. So touch it up. Make it look cooler. You can use those graphical, changes in the dungeon, but you leave the dungeon alone in terms of like what it's going to be. Don't change the bosses or anything like that. Don't update the dungeon. Just leave it alone. But have an outside version of it that you can just go explore and see. This is what happened after they went through. This is what happened after the, you know, Iron Eye died. This is like what's been going on in there since Arcadius got destroyed. Or did he get destroyed? Maybe he just got really badly hurt and then eventually gets back up. And now he's really mad. You know, what's going on in Uldumon since we moved on? Since that was the first place where we found any of this Titan stuff. It's where we found the Discs of Norgannon.
It was like the genesis for all of this strange Bran Bronzebeard-led research into Titan ruins and things like that.
Yeah. So what's been going on there? What happened with the whole Discs of Norgannon being there? Like, that's where they got taken after they were taken from Ulduar. What's, you know, when they got
it's
removed from...
It's supposed to be
from
a big research library facility. What else is in there?
Yeah, like, then we know Trogs were in there, and they got out. We know that dwarves and gnomes were probably seem to have been in there. Why were there gnomes there? The gnomes seem to almost be exclusively from the Ulduar region. Why were they in Uldumon? Why were there dwarves in Uldumon? Did they come south too, or what's going on in that place? What were they doing in Uldumon? I'd love to see them do something with that. That would be my pick.
I also wouldn't mind seeing them... You know what I would really like? And I mean, I know it's like, it's part of the whole battleground rotation and everything now, so it's not really as big of a deal, but it's still kind of a big deal to me. I would like to see the Alliance try and take back South Shore and like push up and mop up the Forsaken that are still out there in that area. I think that would be kind of, and maybe push to Gilneas from there. Although again, Gilneas is another one of those places where it's like, I don't know if they could do it, but I think it would be interesting to do. I think it would. And then
if they
like
tried to remake Gilneas into a full city, that would be a pretty big job.
It would. I don't think that they'd make it like a full city or anything. I think it'd still have to be like the ruins and things like that. But if you played a Rogue in Cataclysm, you went back there anyway, and it was after everything else had, you know, been done. And essentially what happened was a black dragon had camped out there and had a bunch of followers, only he was not a black dragon at the time. He was disguised as somebody else, but they were all just sort of following him mindlessly, and you had to take him out and wipe the whole place out and everything, and then it was just kind of left deserted. I think it would be cool just to kind of see like the push there, especially since we have the Night Elves already pushing to take Teldrassil. Well, not Teldrassil, because how can they take Teldrassil back? It's kind of a stump now, which makes me sad
every time I think about it.
But Darkshore, they're back there trying to take Darkshore back, actively trying to do that. And Gilneas came to help them out because, you know, the Night Elves helped them out in their hour of need. So now they're helping out the Night Elves, which totally makes sense. Actually, that was one of my favorite parts about that Darkshore intro for the Alliance side, was that after Tyrande walked off and said, okay, if you aren't going to help me, we're going to get this done ourselves. And Gen stands up and says, if you'll excuse me, I need to go do this for a while because we kind of owe them. And also, if I don't, then Mia's just going to run off by herself because she really likes these guys. And I was like, good. That's a good nod to the novella that came out where Mia was there, like right up till the bitter end, trying to help people get out of there, whether they were Night Elves or Gilneans. I think that it would be cool that if the Night Elves turned around and said, okay, you helped us, we're going to help you, let's get you your home back. I think that'd be great. Anyway.
Well, I just found out you cannot fly to the World Tree anymore.
No, you can't. It
just
teleports you back out.
It teleports me back.
It's not a three-dimensional thing anymore. It's like a painting now. So it's like a flat object that's just there. And it's really, really interesting to look at from a distance, but yeah, when you fly up to it, it's like nope, and just teleports you back out again, unless you reset, like you go talk to the bronze dragon and set things back again, and then you could go back to Darnassus and everything, it's all still there. But yeah, can you think of anywhere else, Corey, that you would want to see one?
I was thinking about a lot of places that were like right next door to the current war fronts. Ashenvale, see what's happened there since the Horde kind of took over in Cataclysm. Set up a couple bases there. The Mistlands right south of the Rathi Highlands. Maybe the dwarves have rebuilt the dam. It's
What would work along those lines? What's going on in Alterac?
Oh yeah.
Not Alterac Valley, the Alterac Mountains.
Yeah.
That whole Alterac, like we kind of like nothing just going, never saw it again.
There's a Grinch there once a year, and we go beat him up, and that's about all that happens in that area now. That's it.
Like maybe the you know some brotherhood or another could show up. Like there's you know various roguish groups. The Syndicate used to be in that area. Maybe the Syndicate got when the Syndicate got pushed out of Arathi. Maybe they went back to Alterac. That's where they're originally from. Maybe some Paranold showed up and he's like trying to reclaim his you know ancestral title. You could
I think
do a
we
lot.
We wiped out all the Paranolds, didn't we?
Maybe it's an imposter.
Yeah. Maybe it's another Black Dragon that we didn't know about. Rathian didn't know about.
Maybe it's
let's
Rathian.
Find out what's happening with Rathian. Let's do that. Let's focus on that. No, okay. Anyway, so I think we've kind of like answered that into the ground here. I think we've got time for one more. Let's just go to the last question here. And this one is from, it looks like it's from Discord. So this question says, question for the podcast / Lore Watch. Is the World of Warcraft too good? I mean, it feels like we're always banging our heads against some uniform evil and uniting behind it. But a world isn't always all good, and many characters and classes would take different approaches to different subjects. In D&D, you're allowed to play a spectrum, and because of that, it opens up many different paths for you. But in World of Warcraft, they keep up the challenge to find moral high ground for the Horde while letting the Alliance drown in its sunshine banality. Those are some words, dude. Anyway, it says, I would almost argue we should be allowed to mine the ashes of Teldrassil for its sinister nutrients, continue to enslave dragons, and should have the option to align with Sargeras or the old gods. Well, we can't really align with Sargeras because Sargeras is busy having his face beaten in by Illidan somewhere
on a
planet far, far away.
You can't make an alliance with somebody who thinks of you as like a bad case of lice that the girl he's really impressed with has. And that's if he thinks about you at all. Sargeras does not care about us. He cares about the world soul inside this planet. And the old gods think of us as tasty things to mess with. Like you can ally with them, sure. You can
okay,
totally
but,
be a, you know.
But to go back to the question at hand here, do we think that the World of Warcraft is focusing too much on us being good or trying to find some kind of moral high ground or something better to be?
Is there a way that I can say that the Horde has gone full on supervillain evil without making people angry? Because I'm sorry, you guys, I'm having a hard time thinking of how morally good the moral high ground the Horde's got going on. Sorry, I know people love to play the Horde.
They're doing
I'm not
some
you're
really,
wrong.
Really dark things right now, and I'd kind of argue right now that they are leaning towards the side of not so great. There are elements of the Horde that are kind of like not okay with that, and you can choose to side with the ones that are not okay with that, or you can choose to side with the side that is doing things that maybe aren't the best things in the world to be doing. So that choice is kind of there a little bit. The Sour Fang questline allows you to make that choice a little bit. There's not really a counterpart on the Alliance side. There's no point in the Alliance where it's like, hey, would you like to do something really evil? That's just not how the Alliance works.
I admit that I wouldn't mind. Like, if there was something. Okay, sorry, Corey. No, I was jumping on you. You go.
It looked like for a second that was going to be Jaina, but then she just disappeared for all of Legion. Now she's kind of towing the company line again, getting the Kul'tirans on the side and showing up to save the day.
I kind of have hope that that's what D'Zara Lore is going to be a little bit, that it's a military victory, but it's one that kind of ends up not having been the really good decision and one that's more of a warring. It's more out of blood hunger and warring interest than actually doing the right thing. Like it looks like, I mean, I don't know because I haven't done the fights yet and I've only seen minimal stuff about it, but we know who the bosses are in there. And we know that at the end of this, when the Alliance is all said and done, when they've finished their attack and the Horde are driving them out, they will have made an enemy where they didn't have one before. And so that's kind of like, I'm hoping that that's something that gets played into the idea that, you know, you can have the best of intentions, but do the wrong thing.
And I feel like they maybe touched on that a little bit already, just with the introduction to Lost Honor. When Anduin was looking at the bodies that were coming in, and he made that comment where he said, at first I thought we were fighting, you know, for peace, for the greater good, but now I'm beginning to think we're just fighting, just fighting. So it sounds like that's something that's kind of starting to sink in with Anduin a little bit. But yeah, I don't know if that's going to be something that comes across to like the average player, or if it's something that's just reserved for Anduin and how Anduin is thinking, and he's going to kind of like explain it to us all at some point. I hope it's not just a case of Anduin explaining this to us all. I hope it's something where we get to come to that conclusion ourselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that there's certainly some room for that in what's going on, but there's still a lot we don't know. We don't know anything about 8.2 yet. So, I mean, we do know some things about 8.2, but we don't know anything about the story of it. So we don't know how that's going to play into the whole Horde Alliance conflict. I do, in general, I play a lot of D&D, and quite frankly, when you have a D&D group with a lot of guys who do stuff like, you know, we're going to like ally with evil and drink the blood of our enemies, and it just, after a while, it gets really hard to run a game with them. So I feel like WoW doesn't need to go to the point where, you know, every time you get a quest, it's like, we can save these babies from this burning orphanage. Oh, we can eat them. Like, I don't want that. That's okay. I don't want to choose the eat them option. I get that, you know, some people would want to, but I'm down on not doing that.
Okay. I have a modest proposal that, you know, babies are good eating.
Yeah.
No. Okay, Corey, you got anything else to add?
Besides that.
It's just the scope of the storytelling they're doing. When it's you and your buddies and there's five people sitting around a table with the storyteller present, it's really easy to change things up on the fly and give people the in-depth, deep moral decisions. But with 5 million people playing, or 3 million people playing the game, whatever the number is now, you're looking at a lot more individual choices. So you would end up splitting the factions into 3 or 4 different camps easily. And that's a lot of development time to make storylines for each and every possible choice that a player wants to make.
Yeah, they're making forays into giving people choice. Like we just talked about, the fact that you can pick, you know, okay, Sylvanas, you want me to kill Sarvang? I'm down. Or you can be like, nope, not doing it. And that's cool, but I don't know how much of that you can really put in. Like, not every quest can't have that kind of moral dichotomy into it, or we'll never be getting anywhere. There will be no coherent narrative.
Well, and I think where I stand on that right now is that I'm cool that we were given the decision. It was interesting, too, because when I was playing through that quest chain and I got to the point where it was like, okay, you have a choice to make here. What's your choice going to be? I picked what I wanted to pick, because it was just a snap decision for me. I knew what I would pick, and I knew what the character I was playing would pick, just based on who they were and how I thought of them, because I'm on a role-playing server. We think about these things, right? There was another person that was standing there, and they were just standing there. And all of a sudden, they piped up and they said, I've been standing here for 10 minutes, and I still can't. I don't know what to do. Like, they had to think about it. Like, they really had to think about it. And they never really had to think about it like that before. So it's cool that they introduced this moment where we have to think if we want to, get into, you can think as much or as little about that decision as you want. But it warns you when you make that decision. If you choose not to take the path that has already been set, it says that there will be consequences and people will remember this choice that you've made. And it asks you if you're sure. And if you say, yes, you're sure, okay, you're set on that road now. Where that road leads, I don't know. And if it's not handled appropriately, then I'm going to start to question whether or not we should have been given the decision to begin with. But if it is handled appropriately, then we've got a new dimension all of a sudden added to our gameplay, something that wasn't there before. One of those things that I always really enjoyed about BioWare games in particular was that you had that choice. It was a single-player RPG. The only game you were affecting was your own, and you were the main character and the only character in your story, and you had all these NPCs who were already written out, and they had various ways that they could react to you depending on what choices you made. And it made sense in the context of a single player RPG because there were only so many choices to be made. That game had a finite end to it, and whatever end the choices that you made led to one of those finite endings, whatever one you happened to lead up to. you don't have a finite ending in an MMO. It just keeps going. So I'm interested in seeing how they handle this and whether this is a step towards something new and interesting for the MMO genre in general, or whether maybe this was a misstep and they shouldn't have tried to do this. I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I'm excited to find out.
I think that's pretty much it then, isn't it? That's the show.
Yeah, that pretty much wraps us up for emails and wraps us up for the show. Hey, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch, and your continued support means that this podcast site and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch's supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you, Anne, and let's take a moment and thank Corey for doing the show with us today and helping us with the HGC Heroes thing.
Thanks for hopping in, Corey. Appreciate it.
It was a lot of fun. I wish I was here with better news to report on HGC.
It's all good.
But, okay, guys, if you have an email for the show, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Subject line, podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for the show. Thank you guys so much for listening. This has been the Blizzard Watch Podcast, and we'll be here next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.